RVFTA's Campground of the Week is sponsored by Jayco. To view their complete line of RVs, visit jayco.com. And by Progressive Insurance. Get an RV policy quote by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting progressive.com/RV.
America the Beautiful. There is adventure to be found around every corner.
And there is no better way to explore it than by staying at one of our country's 14,000 campgrounds.
Our team of correspondents will guide you to the best places to park your rig or pitch your tent.
On each week's episode, we'll give a complete review of one campground, location, activities, amenities, best sites, and tons of other insider intel.
Plus, we'll talk about regional highlights, food, culture, attractions, family fun, and all things great outdoors.
From the East Coast to the West Coast, and from the Great Lakes to the Mississippi Delta, it's time to hit the open road with RVFTA's Campground of the Week. Our guest correspondent is Scott Elias, a former educator based in Colorado who now works for Apple. Scott grew up camping in Florida, but his wife Lorraine never did. They decided to dive into the RV lifestyle with their two kids last year and purchased a Jayco Whitehawk. His family has already enjoyed their camping trips exploring the Rocky Mountains and are looking forward to many more in the future. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Hi, Scott. It's so nice to have a new voice on the show, and especially from the great state of Colorado. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
All right. So we are excited to dive into your very first Campground of the Week review. Where are you taking us to in the great state of Colorado?
Today, we are going to San Luis State Park, Mosca Campground in southern Colorado.
All right. We are excited to hear everything you have to say about this park. But first of all, we want to thank our sponsor, Progressive Insurance. For many of you, your weekends are spent on the open road. Feel confident knowing that with Progressive's 24/7 roadside assistance, you will never be stranded. In fact, Progressive will tow your RV and your vehicle, even if your vehicle isn't insured by them. Travel without worry. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com/RV.
And we hope that Scott travels with that word.
I do. And I think that Scott's taken a lot of weekend trips in Colorado, right? Scott, is that what we hear?
Yeah, quite a few weekend trips. Unfortunately, no longer being in public education, I don't get as much time off as I might like. So we try to do some long weekend trips. And then we've done a couple of longer trips as well.
How many camping nights did you get in on your during your very first RV season?
Oh, gosh, I'd have to check my forum signature. I think in the 20s.
In the 20s is a very solid rookie year.
Very,
you could be rookie of the year contention.
Do you think there. Scott's playing it cool, like he doesn't quite know how many nights? Because I feel like a lot of people know their exact number.
Like he
number.
Did like five and he just said 20. No, I don't think so, because I follow him on Instagram. So I've seen the photographic evidence.
All right, Scott. So you chose this campground as your very first review for us. We said, hey, can you pick a spot that you went in your first year of camping and review it for us? And you chose this one. Tell us where it is and what's so great about it.
Sure. Mosca Campground in San Luis State Park. It's in south central Colorado. It's pretty remote. It's not the easiest campground to get to. For us, it was supposed to be part of a longer trip. We actually ended up not being able to go on the whole trip because we had a sick kid, so you know how that goes. But it's about 4 hours from Denver, just about 200 miles, and it's about 50 miles north of the New Mexico border. So you're in this really, really beautiful high mountain valley, relatively close to Alamosa, Colorado. So on a map, finding Alamosa, Colorado, and then looking straight north, you would find San Luis State Park.
So it's not quite a weekend destination for the good people of Denver, but it's within striking distance for that type of shorter trip.
I would say like a long weekend. I think if you're going to make that drive, you really want to be there probably a good 3 nights so you get 2 full days because you've got probably a lot of driving on either side.
All right. So you mentioned that Mosca. Am I saying that right? Mosca?
Yes.
Okay. So you mentioned that Mosca Campground is a state park. Give us a general idea of the size and like the surrounding area.
Sure. So Mosca Campground is actually the state campground inside San Luis State Park. So the state park is San Luis State Park. It's a small-ish state park campground in Colorado. There's about 50, 51 sites in the campground. And it is geographically very interesting because you're situated between the San Juan Mountain Range and the Sangre de Cristo Mountain Range, but you are in High Mountain Valley. So it's relatively flat, and you have a beautiful view of Great Sand Dunes National Park, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later. But for us, it was a really nice location just outside of the national park. And I think we kind of talked about a good opportunity to talk about national park campgrounds in the NPS 100 year this year.
Yeah, and I mean, based on the pictures that we saw of yours, this is the kind of campground that really is all about the views, it looks like.
Yeah, it is. It is most definitely about the views. It is just a vista in every direction. And we were there relatively early in the summer season, the week after Memorial Day. And so I think in the picture that I sent you, you can still see quite a bit of snow on the high peaks. Just beautiful weather.
In some ways, it's just not fair, Scott, in terms of the type of pictures you can take of your camper with the mountains behind you. And there are times when I'm jealous of all you people out there on the West Coast and your Instagram accounts. And
yeah, he always gets a little
jealous. To take good photos, just like snap.
Oh, and know, there's a mountain.
Mountains behind it, 5,000 likes. You know, while we on the East Coast struggle.
I think we feel the same way sometimes, though, when we see your densely wooded campgrounds and your pictures of beach camping, because we just don't get a lot of opportunities to beach camp. And so much of the geography in Colorado is, you know, high mountain desert, and it's open, like you saw.
Yeah, you just did. You just did a very good job of giving
Jeremy
a little.
Ego.
Right, give him a little. Ego. He likes that. He's happy. All right.
So, I like your Instagram too, Jeremy.
Thank you. Sweetie. All right. You can come back to the show now. All right. Now, this campground you said has only 51 sites, which is sort of on the small side, but it seems like they have a wide variety of sites. Let's zoom in, like kind of ignore the snow-topped mountains for a little while, and talk about the actual sites and the variety of sites that are available here.
So the sites have all the sites have electric hookup, but you are bringing in your own water. They are pretty nicely spaced, so it's pretty open, so you do see your neighbors. There's no kind of avoiding that. But they've got some RV sites which are all pull through. In addition, they have some sites that are pretty well suited for car camping, so if people are bringing tents with them. And they also had some sites that are walk-in camping sites. There is seasonally there is a lake there that's from the runoff from the mountains. So the walk-in sites were down close to the wetlands. So there's definitely some variety. As you probably saw in the picture, not a lot of trees. So there's just not a lot of shade at most of the sites. So if you are tent camping, early season or late season is probably for the best because the sun will take a toll.
Big rig friendly at all in terms of these pull-throughs? Are they big enough to get in a 40-foot Class A?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the pictures I sent has a pretty big motorhome that was right across the road from us. So there was all variety of travel trailers as well as some Class A's and fifth wheels in there as well.
And the drive-in isn't treacherous. Sometimes I think of Colorado and I think of scary driving.
The drive into the actual campground itself is pretty flat. It's packed gravel to get in there. There's no paved roads in the campground. The drive from Denver, depending on which way you go, you are going to want to be careful because you may end up going over the Continental Divide once or twice on the way in.
It's just the Continental Divide.
If you're coming from Denver, you kind of go south around, south through the Pueblo area, and you can kind of come around the bottom of the mountain. So if that is a concern, you could still get in without having to tow over the divide.
And that's just like crossing the Mason-Dixon line, right?
No big deal. With some altitude.
It's not even real.
Now, and just to zoom back in on the sites again, what does each site have on it?
What kind of hookups are we looking at?
Electric only. They have water stations scattered around the campground. We had one that was only a couple of probably 50 feet away from the site, so we could fill up water bottles and things like that. But you are going to want to pack in your own water. And there are there's no sanitary dump on each site, although they have two total at the park.
Okay, so you can dump on your way out.
Yes, you can dump on your way out.
All right, that's always a good one because
because you need to dump.
We all need to dump. Well, Brett told us about the historical dump station in Idaho, but not every state has
their state dump station.
Yeah, that's not something that I really want to spend a lot of time at a rustic dump station. But the sites themselves, you are pretty you're pretty sparse. You've got electric, and then each site does have a really nice picnic shelter, which is a kind of a metal picnic shelter, almost if you can imagine the shape of a metal C with the closed-in part facing west. So it keeps some of that afternoon sun off of you, so there is some shade over a picnic table.
That's really nice.
Keeps you out of the wind as well, because being out in the open in Colorado, wind is always a concern.
And that's the same for beach camping. It sounds like this is your version of beach camping, where you do have to be a little more concerned about the elements and the sun and the wind.
For instance, like, we love the Cape Hatteras KOA, and there's shelters at some of the sites.
Yeah.
For them to be at every site is like a really nice little perk there.
Now, let's talk about the price range. I'm assuming that we're going to get a real steal here at because it's a state park, but I don't know if we know a lot about the pricing in Colorado state parks.
Yeah, the campground itself is $24 a night, and you're reserving through Reserve America. On top of that, you will have to pay state park entrance. A lot of folks in Colorado, because we have such an expansive state park network, we purchased an annual state park pass at the beginning of the season, and that has served us well. But so you're paying $24 a night plus the admission to the state park itself.
How much is that pass? Just guess if you don't know exactly.
I want to say it was $80 or $90 for the year.
Okay, great value. And they have an expansive state park system, unlike New Jersey.
Right. Now, is this true for all of the state parks in Colorado, that they're all 6 months out? Because we know that time, that reservation window does vary from state to state.
The ones that I have looked at, they are a six-month window. So that means that we are looking actually next month at trying to get some of our early season long weekends booked, because they do fill up.
And it's competitive. You feel like you have to be there on the day the reservation opens, like sort of clicking refresh to get your choice of spot.
Yes, we were. We booked this after we bought our camper, so we're talking about March when we booked a trip in May or late May, early June, and so we ended up with like a Tuesday through Thursday was the only option that we had. So if you want to have your choice of weekends and do a long weekend, you really do need to be hovering over the mouse pad at that 6 month window.
That's a great bargain. We've said it before. Just out west, the state park campgrounds are really cheap. I mean, in New Jersey, we have a county park campground that's close to us that's $40 a night for water and electric. So those prices are attractive, and you can see why people jump on them 6 months in advance.
All right. So is this fit the mold of a pretty simplified state park in terms of the amenities that they have at the campground?
Yes, you're definitely not going to get the pool or anything like that. There was a relatively clean restroom and shower facility. Everything is pay showers out there out west, and so there's a real clean shower facility. Had a laundry facility, but other than that, you're really not going to get many amenities. The ranger station, because we were there in the middle of the week, it was only part-time staffed, so it's definitely not full service. There really was nothing in the way of like a camp store. So if you forgot peanut butter, you were driving 20 miles to Alamosa to pick it up.
All right.
I sometimes wonder, though, why that type of campground doesn't make a little money by selling some of the basics.
It's almost this.
It's almost, yes, I don't mind commerce. It's almost this sort of willful desire to not make money. It's like a Western thing or something. I don't know.
No.
Yeah, some of our state parks are relatively new, newly remodeled, and they do have small-ish camp stores where you can get the basics. But this one, we were not there while the ranger station was even open, so you're kind of on your own.
So what are you going to do while you're hanging out at this campground, Scott? What do they got going on activity-wise?
I think the primary activity at San Luis State Park is relaxing at your camper and taking in the views.
That sounds fantastic.
That sounds amazing.
You're talking to two tired parents, Scott.
Right now, like this very moment in my life, that sounds better than pools and bounce pillows and mini golf. It really does.
That's true. There's a lake there that's full enough for a good part of the season that you can kayak in. They only allow hand propelled craft, so also some bike trails. But it's really more about being out in nature. If you're a bird watcher, which I am not, I understand that the wetlands between the mountain ranges do attract some unique bird species, none of which I could tell you about.
Now, you also say that there's lots to do in the national park, which we'll talk about in the next segment, but that a lot of people that are camping here and then going off to the national park.
Yeah, that's correct. You're 15 miles outside of Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve, and the reason that we selected the state park to camp in versus camping in the national park is the national park was a dry camping experience, and we wanted to at least have electricity.
Yeah, that electric makes all the difference, especially with getting those kids to sleep on a hot night for us. That's like the difference yes. between being happy and all of us getting being pretty tired. Now, what about the Wi-Fi or cell signal while you were here? Were you able to make a phone call or upload a picture?
Yep, I had a phone on T-Mobile, and it was definitely fine for sending pictures to family, and I had an iPad with Verizon, and we had service at the campground.
But no Wi-Fi, just cell service?
Oh, goodness, no Wi-Fi.
Goodness, no.
He mocks us.
That's my favorite response ever to us asking the Wi-Fi question. Oh, goodness, no.
But it's nice, though.
My kids would have wanted Wi-Fi, but no, there was no Wi-Fi unless I made Wi-Fi.
Now, we're just getting to know you, Scott, but it sounds like you probably actually liked that.
You know, it was nice. It's always nice to take a break from work and be a little bit disconnected. So, yeah, there were no complaints.
Scott, we're going to ask you some questions like a little, because we haven't really had you on the show before, but how old are your kids?
My kids are 12 and 9. I have a son okay. who is a 7th grader, and my daughter is a 4th grader.
Okay, so they are definitely aware of the whole world of Wi-Fi and whether or not they have it at any given moment.
Well, since we're having a getting-to-know-you moment also, like, were they very excited about the purchase of the Jayco Whitehawk? I mean, how was their first camping season? I get the sense you loved it. How about them?
They had a great time. I think it's not dissimilar from others that I've heard you talk to. My son, who I thought would be all over it, you know, he's a 7th grader. It's dragging him out of the house. There's no Wi-Fi. He doesn't want to go. But once he gets there, he's completely fine. And my daughter, who I thought would be a little bit more reluctant, she's definitely a girly girl. She is totally like, when are we camping again? You know, can we go more?
4th grade is such a great age for just exposure to new things. It's like they're just ready to be passionate about everything, it feels like.
Yes. And going into 4th grade, we knew this is the year, probably like a lot of states, we do our Colorado history unit is in 4th grade. So it was really important for us, my wife and I both as educators, that we get that we got her out around the state to see some of the things that they're going to be talking about in school.
And 4th grade, you can get your pass to the national parks.
Year.
Yep. So sure. You got a lot of bang for your buck out of that trailer this year. It's a good yep. year to get it.
Okay, Scott, any insider details about the campground, just those little nitty-gritty details that might help our listeners who want to camp here?
Yeah, I think there's not a bad site in the place. They all have just gorgeous views of the mountains to the east and the mountains to the west. If I were choosing and had my choice of spots, I would be a little bit closer to the lake just because you're looking at a view of the lake with mountains behind it as opposed to the view of a bunch of campers, then a lake, then mountains behind it. But we're splitting hairs there because there's not a bad site there.
That's just all about the Instagram account at that point. So,
that's correct.
What about any little suggestion for improvement for our Nobody's Perfect segment, right? I mean, this sounds like a gorgeous place, and it was the first place that you wanted to recommend to our listeners. But what would you like to see happen in the future with the development of this campground?
I think there's kind of a nobody's perfect, and then the other piece of that is the I like how you've said it in the past, the camper beware. The nobody's perfect to me is something that they could definitely address, which is at the dump station, for some reason, it was sort of sloped up toward the dump station. So when you'd pull in parallel to the dump station, everything that you were trying to dump would go to the wrong side of the camper. So I had to roll over some leveling blocks in order to kind of really get the tank.
So
nice
you didn't
and
just pick up the camper with your bare hands.
Like Jeremy does.
You know, I tried, but it was fully loaded, Jeremy. So, you know, if it was empty.
Your rig's under 30 foot.
Dry weight.
You've got one of those Murphy bed situations. I would have just picked it up.
That That is really, I've never seen that before. That is an, you know, an
the
unfortunate
one thing that
thing.
Really actually needs to be level is the dump station, apparently. Yeah.
Right? It wasn't super pronounced, but it was just enough that I'm like, why can I not get that 1/3 full light to go out in the instrument panel? Then you would kind of look and you weren't perfectly level.
Scott, let me give you some other advice too, since you're in your first season of RV ownership. Those lights stop working mighty fast.
Especially and once, when you have kids.
And once they stop working, they never work again. There is toilet paper lodged against the sidewalls of those tanks. But anyway, I'm sure that you're right, that there was stuff in the tank because you weren't level. So.
All right, so what about our camper beware?
I think camper beware has more to do with just the geography of where you are in Colorado. I would highly recommend if this is a stop that's going to be on your list, that you try to go relatively early in the season or late in the season, because with those wetlands, I think one of the things that we were looking at was if we had been there probably 2 or 3 weeks later, I think it would have been mosquito paradise. The other piece about being there during those kind of shoulder seasons, though, is that you do have to watch out for Colorado weather, because you are out in the open. We had a thunderstorm 2 of the 3 afternoons we were there, and we just huddled up in the camper. And for the most part, we just kind of enjoyed riding it out. But there were those moments like, are we going to get blown over? So just kind of being aware of the weather, that you are out there in the open with lightning and wind and all that comes along with that. But I definitely would not want to be there much later in the summer, because it could be hot and buggy.
And pay attention to that awning. I mean, that's, you know, you have that there.
You said it's like beach camping. It's the same thing.
It's an easy mistake to make, to go out for 2 hours, leave your awning open and come back and it's destroyed.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely, I could see awnings getting eaten alive there.
Hey, so Scott, from a local's perspective, what is the best time of year to enjoy this place then?
I liked when we went, I'll tell you, early June. It was beautiful. The nights were still cool. Also, I think when we talk about Great Sand Dunes, we'll talk a little more, but some of the best stargazing in the continental U.S. because you're at altitude and clear skies. So I think early season, I would also... this time of year, I would probably also go. It's, you know, October-ish.
Okay. So thank you, Scott, so much for that great review of Mosca Campground in San Luis State Park. We are going to be back in a second to talk about the very big attraction nearby and everything else you need to know about visiting this destination. Stay tuned.
Since 1968, Jayco, the world's largest privately owned RV manufacturer, has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories together.
Today, Jayco offers everything from camping trailers to gas Class A motorhomes, complete with more standard features and a longer, stronger 2-year warranty.
Jayco gives you the value you're looking for and the peace of mind you deserve. Lots of family fun is to be had around a campfire with a Jayco nearby.
For more information, visit your closest Jayco dealer or jayco.com. Jayco, generations of family fun.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are pleased as punch to be here with our guest correspondent, Scott Elias, and he just gave us a great review of the Mosca Campground at San Luis State Park in the great camping state of Colorado, and it really is one of the best states to camp in. And now he's going to take us outside of the campground and tell us what to do in the area, and it's got something to do with hashtag NPS 100, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think the main attraction in this part of Colorado, and some might argue the only attraction in this particular part of Colorado, is Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve. And it's about 15 miles, an easy straight shot, 20 minutes down the highway. You can actually see the dunes from the campground.
Now, are you a regular visitor of this national park, or is this something that you were visiting for the first time with your trailer?
We were visiting for the first time, and it's a little bit of a drive, as we said, kind of at the top from Fort Collins, where I live down there. So you'd really have to make a special trip to get out there. So we're regular in Rocky Mountain. This was probably more of a once or twice in a lifetime kind of thing.
Okay, so this is perfect because you're gonna like kind of help everybody learn what to do on their very first visit, which is probably what most of our listeners would be doing. So what do you suggest?
Yep. Gosh, we did it all. We had about 3 days there, all told, and we did everything from hiking the dunes to doing some sledding on the dunes. So we can kind of take those one at a time. The dunes are very unique in national park in the national park system in that there are no formal trails through the park, where most national parks have a trail that starts here and ends there and is a certain number of miles. You are pretty much free to hike the dunes anywhere that you would like. It looks like something out of the very first Star Wars movie, and that you are, it's such a unique environment because you have this mountain range with snow-capped peaks right behind these really, really unique sand dunes. And so a lot to learn in the visitor center, but then when you actually get out there and start hiking the dunes, it really becomes apparent just how huge these things are. And we as a family, we hiked the high dune about 700 feet up, and it is a lot of work walking around in that sand.
Oh yeah, I mean, we talked about that a little bit with the Sleeping Bear Dunes coverage that we did this summer, but you did this with the kids. What kind of precautions did you take? Sort of, if these aren't like established trails and you're hiking in sand, you know, how did that go with your family?
Well, you know, you can kind of see where you're going, which is both a blessing and a curse because it looks really close, but it never gets any closer. So, you know, my kids were up for it. They were good sports. I think one of the important things, and also maybe goes back to best time of year to visit, the later in the summer you go, the actual sand can get close to 150 degrees under your feet. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, early season, it wasn't too bad. So we actually just crossed the creek, which we'll talk about as another fun thing to do in a minute, crossed the creek, took our shoes off, and just sort of went for it. And you're pretty close when you talk about beach camping. I grew up in Fort Lauderdale, and since we left Florida, this is the most sand I have. I think I'm still vacuuming sand out of my truck.
Yeah, right. It just doesn't quit.
I'm actually surprised there's any sand left for anyone else to enjoy because I thought we brought it all back with us.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about this creek you were splashing around in.
So because of where the dunes are located, they are at the base of the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. And so all of the snow melt off the mountains, when you go early in the season, it all flows down into Medano Creek. And it's about 100 yards wide, but it's only 6 to 12 inches deep. So to get from the visitor center over to the dunes, you are essentially wading through this creek. And it very much looks like the only beach you'll really see in Colorado. You've got kids laying in the water, kids building sandcastles on the beach, people bringing their lounge chairs out. So it really is a very beachy experience that you have to cross through this creek every time you want to get onto the actual dunes themselves.
I love that feeling too. Like, you know, the National Park Service isn't making it like everything paved and easy. You know, it's kind of like more of a natural experience, it sounds like.
Yeah, very much a natural experience. And the nice thing about going early in the season is the creek is flowing. You can float an inner tube on certain parts of the creek. As the season goes on and the snow melt dries up, the creek dries out.
Can you get a good long run, a good long tubing run on the creek, or is it just maybe 30 yards, 40 yards?
It's probably not going to be what you may experience out east or out in the Smoky Mountains in terms of float. It's going to be more like a lazy river. So depending on how deep the water is running, you could get a good long run.
But super kid friendly for little kids. I mean, it's really sounding like something like Wesley would love this. You know, our 3-year-old would just be in heaven here.
Oh yeah, it's like I said, 6 to 12 inches deep. Kids splashing around everywhere. So yeah, the little guys would love it.
Now, are there other hiking opportunities besides the dune walks?
Yeah, so there's actually hiking on the east side of the dunes is the Sangre de Cristo Range. So you've got a variety of hikes in there, anywhere from short 3/4 mile to 1 mile hikes through the forest, all the way up to you're not too far from Blanca Peak, which is one of our 14ers that we have here in Colorado. They're the mountains that are over 14,000 feet. So if you were so inclined, we were not, you could hike to the top of Blanca Peak.
Now, is all this within the national park? Or are you moving out of the park to do some of that hiking? I'm wondering, what's the variety of landscape within the actual national park? Are the sand dunes the whole thing, or are those hikes in the forest also part of the park?
The hikes in the forest are part of the National Park and Preserve. The park has expanded, so it does not just include the dunes, but it also includes some of the the mountains to sort of to the east where the forest is. So you're still within the national park system.
They probably tacked on that word preserve when they started expanding, right? The Great Sand Dunes National Park and preserve.
So yes. How long, if you were recommending to somebody visiting Colorado, how many days would be ideal to explore this particular national park? I mean, obviously you could spend a lifetime exploring Rocky Mountain National Park, but how much time do you need to spend here to really get a good sense of it?
I feel like we had kind of the perfect amount. We got there probably lunchtime-ish on the first day, then had two full days, and then we left first thing in the morning on our last day. So I think two full days is good. I'm glad we had that extra half day because hiking the dunes, you want to get kind of an early start on that, but you're going to be pretty exhausted. So that's almost half a day right there. Splashing in the creek was just kind of something that we did whenever we passed the creek. The kids would say, oh, can we stay and play in the creek for a little bit? One of the days we actually did something really unique, which you can only do in a few places in the country, which is we went sandboarding and sand sledding. So there are a couple of spots outside of the national park that rent sandboarding and sand sledding equipment. And it was money well spent. You throw them in the truck and you drive in and then you sort of hike up some of the smaller dunes and you strap on the sandboard just like a snowboard and you can actually go sledding and sandboarding down the dunes. So that was a fantastic experience. We had a great time and a soft landing.
Do you get the kind of like speed and ability to move quickly like you do on a snowboard, or is it a little more sluggish in the sand? I mean, what does it feel like?
It's a little bit slower than going over snow or ice, but they give you like a whole lesson on the board. It's, you know, you have wax and you wax the board up and then you get ready to go. And every run you take, you have to re-wax the board. So you get some pretty good speed. There were some kids that were, doing some pretty vertical dunes they were going down, and we didn't get that crazy with it, but, I'm going really slow, but it felt like I was going really fast. Yeah.
This sounds like so much fun. Like this
really
does. This would be at the top of my list.
I just could see all three of our boys just absolutely loving this place.
And me. This sounds
like
fun.
And like you said, that soft landing is appealing as well.
Now, Scott, there were falls here in this park and preserve too?
So just outside of the National Park and Preserve, there is some BLM land that is, government federal land. And there is a relatively well-known in the area waterfall called Zapata Falls. And you hike up to a creek, and the whole hike itself is under a mile. But you hike up to this creek, and then the last maybe 50, 75 yards up to the actual waterfall, you are actually walking in the creek to get up to the point where the waterfall is. So the downside of going early in the season like we did is the water in the creek is freezing cold. It's probably only a few degrees above freezing. And the water was running just a little bit high where I was not totally comfortable getting the kids in there. My son and I went up for a little bit till we could just kind of see the falls, and then we turned around and came back.
Sounds like a very unique trip for a photographer, too. For any of our listeners who are really interested in photography, it sounds like you have a variety of very unique landscapes to photograph.
Yeah, you have everything from mountains above tree line, snow-capped mountains, to sort of subalpine forest, to waterfalls, creeks, and the dunes themselves. And then just south and kind of moving west of the dunes, you've got the wetlands. So you've got a lot of four-legged animals, a lot of insects, and then you've got birds as well. So what was really unique to me was just the variety of geological features within a relatively small area.
This reminds me so much of Sleeping Bear Dunes this summer, Stephanie. The sand dunes, the water aspect to it, not so much the mountains necessarily, but just a very unique, almost alien kind of landscape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things that you just don't see. There's some special places in this country where you feel like you are seeing something that very few people on Earth see.
And you
right?
can't see mm-hmm. anywhere else. This sounds like there's no other place like this. To some degree.
Yeah, I saw a lot of your pictures from Sleeping Bear Dunes, and I actually thought you were here in the state and hadn't hit me up for a beer. So I was glad that you weren't here in Colorado. So
and you are a craft beer guy. Is that required in Colorado, or can you live in Colorado without being a craft beer guy?
Well, when you move to Colorado, they require that you pick up your Subaru, your Labrador Retriever, and that you start to like craft beers.
Well, we have our Subaru.
We have a Subaru. We have a dog. She's cute. She's not a Labrador, but she's cute.
Is the whole kind of craft coffee thing there in Colorado, or is that not so much a thing?
Not to the extent that you have it. We have a couple of good places. We're in Fort Collins, which is very much a kind of a progressive college-y kind of town. So we've got a couple coffee shops, but in Colorado, you can stand at one craft brewery, throw a rock, and hit the next one. I mean, it's all over the
place.
And
some people, I'm sure they do that.
They probably do the tour to breweries.
So Colorado is such a phenomenal RV destination, and that's why we just knew we had to find somebody from Colorado with an RV to come on the show and talk about campgrounds that are in that area. So Scott, Elias, thank you so much for joining us on Campground of the Week. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been great to be on the show.
All right. We've talked about your Instagram, your pretty pictures on Instagram. If our listeners want to check out your pictures, where can they do that?
Instagram is the best place, and they can just find me at Scott Elias, E-L-I-A-S, spaces or anything.
You're one of those people that got your names on Instagram.
I did, early enough.
All right, well, that is fantastic. And we also want to thank our sponsor, Progressive Insurance. Did you know that adding your RV insurance with another Progressive policy like auto, motorcycle, or boat is a great way to save money when you're out there on the road seeing the sights? Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com/RV to learn more.
And a big thank you to Jayco. To view their complete line of RVs, head on over to jayco.com. They have all their 2017s up, and I'm excited to have another Jayco owner on the podcast. Welcome to the family, Scott.
Thank you.
And you know what, Scott? We are going to definitely see you at a Colorado campground, and we expect you to have a great craft beer in hand for us when
and
we get there.
We will have you back on the show.
Well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Scott.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in to RVFTA's Campground of the Week.
Links to the campground and regional attractions can be found in the show notes at campgroundoftheweek.com.
And don't forget to check out the other podcasts in our network.
RV Family Travel Atlas is hosted by yours truly, Jeremy and Stephanie Puglisi, and available every Friday morning.
And Girl Camper, Going Places, Doing Things, is hosted by Janine Pettit and released every Tuesday morning.
Join us next Thursday for another great review from our team of campground correspondents who will inspire you to hit the open road and explore America the Beautiful.